Reclaiming Camelot by Tanarian, read by Fairy D 123. Chapter 15. Ianto belatedly seemed to register the other man's presence and twisted around. The movement saved his life, as the knife slashed down on his arm rather than being rammed home into his back. Ianto still gasped and fell back against the dampener, his other hand automatically going to clutch at the injury that was bleeding freely. "Billis," he snarled, glaring at the other man. "What the hell are you doing here?" "Preventing you from playing the saviors of the world yet again," the man said in a precise voice. "Your master might have banished my master into the abyss, but I can still destroy everything that he tries to build. And what better beginning is to have his precious citadel blown to all the corners of time and space? But I can't have you interfering with your changeling gifts and human love. I'm afraid you'll have to die." He lifted the knife again, and Ianto ducked frantically, rolling away and kicking out at Billis. The man had vanished, however, only to reappear behind Ianto, the knife raised in anticipation. Ianto managed to evade it again, but by the narrowest of margins, and when he tried to attack Billis, he pulled his disappearing act again, only to reappear in Ianto's blind spot. Andy's frustration reached boiling point. He gave one last thump at the invisible wall in front of him, in the vain hope that it would take the hint and bugger off. When it remained as softly impervious as before, Andy gave it up as a bad job. A wide sweep with his hand had already told him that there was no wall alongside the stairwell. So with a muttered prayer, he grabbed the railing and vaulted over it, bracing himself with the impact with the floor far below. The landing knocked the breath out of him and sent shooting pains up his legs. But he pushed himself back up and went after Billis, hoping to take him by surprise. To his annoyance, that proved to be impossible, as Billis turned his head to give him a sneering look. "And here we have the child, barely able to walk, but so confident he can ape his betters." Andy snorted. He'd been insulted by experts, and that didn't even come close. "Stabbing people with knives is against the law," he informed Billis severely. "Not to mention aiding and abetting Cardiff getting blown across time and space. Give me that knife now and stop being silly." Billis blinked. "Silly?" he echoed incredulously. "Have you any idea who you're dealing with, you cretin?" Andy was aware of Ianto pulling himself back towards the loose wires and the bomb and realised that his best bet was to keep Billis talking. "Wow, you look like someone from one of those stage plays with that trivet around your neck." Billis's hand automatically went up to the cloth at his throat and his eyes flashed. "That's cravat," he hissed. "Dear me, the captain must be scraping the barrel if you're the best he could find." "Well, it's not like he could put out an advert in the South Wales Echo, could he?" Andy pointed out with an air of gentle triumph. "You're not very practical, are you? You don't keep dogs by any chance. Only you remind me of this dotty uncle I used to have, except he's dead now, of course. So you only remind me of him in the sense that you seem like the type to have dogs as pets, not in the sense of being dead, because it's obvious that you're not, except that this is Torchwood, and having conversations with dead people is probably perfectly normal around here, which is going to be a bit awkward, because I've never done that. Had a conversation with a dead person, I mean. Unless you count that time at school. And I'm pretty sure that Tracy Williams was pushing that glass, because she could never spell cemetery, and it was a bit of a coincidence that the ghost we found couldn't spell it either." Billis had been listening with a glazed expression on his face, but he suddenly seemed to shake himself free of the spell Andy's artless spiel had cast on him, and he swung round suddenly to face Ianto. "Oh, clever little changeling, but I don't think we can allow that, oh no." Andy reached out to grab him, but got only empty air as Billis vanished to reappear right on top of Ianto. The knife was poised, but failed to descend as Ianto lashed out and finally managed to connect. Billis doubled over with a gasp, but he still had hold of the knife, and Ianto couldn't go anywhere since he was pushed up against the dampener and the bomb. Billis straightened up with a malevolent hiss and lunged forward with the knife. Ianto managed to knock it away from the intended target of his heart, but it dug into his side, and he gave a high, gasping cry as he stiffened against the pain. The next second, and Andy had reached them, grabbing Billis around the waist and yanking him away from Ianto. A little to Andy's surprise, Billis didn't turn into smoke under his touch, and they both went sprawling on the floor of the rift chamber. Never one to look a gift horse in the mouth, Andy grabbed for the hand holding the knife and concentrated on prizing the thing away from Billis. Billis snarled and struggled against his grip, but Andy was younger and stronger, and he finally succeeded in sending the knife skittering away along the floor and towards the centre of the chamber. "Didn't your mother tell you that it's wrong to play with knives?" Andy panted. "You stupid little man," Billis raged. "I will crush you like the insignificant insect that you are. I will rip out your heart and feed it to the scorpions. I will..." Andy stopped listening to him, because every hair on his body was suddenly standing to attention, and he was chronically aware that something was standing just behind him and was just about to touch him. His shoulder blades were prickling so badly that he felt himself shifting and flexing them in a futile attempt to escape that ominous feeling. Billis suddenly stopped talking and was staring over Andy's shoulder, an expression of intense horror twisting his face. "No, it can't be," he whimpered. "No, you don't exist. You can't exist." The presence grew stronger, and Andy suddenly smelt lilacs and burnt toast, and was back in the cottage his family had always rented every year on the coast, with him and his sisters running wild, and their customary warfare suspended for the duration of the holidays. The three of them, with a packet of sandwiches and a bottle of pop each, exploring for miles and making up wild adventures involving smugglers and pirates and mermaids. There was warm breath on his cheek, and out of the very corner of his eye he could see a glimmering outline that stayed tantalizingly out of focus. The smell of lilac became that of new-mown grass, and he was suddenly in Butte Park, lying flat on his back with Tanya lying with him, and stubbornly refusing to see the two-headed dragon she said was in the clouds above them. "Your name is Andy." The voice seemed to come from far away, but was a clear whisper right next to his ear. "I shall remember you." Andy somehow felt the focus of attention slide from him onto Billis, who was suddenly looking a lot less dangerous. "I already know your name." The silent voice was cold as winter snow. "You go too far when you threaten to undo that which was made." Andy sensed a gathering of some kind, and Billis made one huge effort and pushed Andy off him, vanishing away as soon as he was free. Andy got one sideways glimpse of something long and sinuous and softly glowing, as it seemed to dive into thin air and vanish. But then it was gone, and he was left alone in the chattering shadows. Remembering Ianto, he scrambled to his feet and went back to check on him, only to find him putting the finishing touches to a hastily rigged patch job on the bomb. He battered away Andy's attempts to find out how badly injured he was. "No time for that. We have to get out of here before this thing goes. Help me up." Andy managed to get him onto his feet and put an arm around his waist to support him. He felt, rather than heard, Ianto's shuddering grasp, but he realized that his hand felt wet, and when he pulled it away to look at it, it was covered in blood. "Bloody hell, Ianto!" Ianto shook his head and pushed them both in the direction of the stairwell. "We have to get at least as far as the corridor." Andy decided he needed his breath for the climb, which was bad enough most times, but was doubly so when he had an injured man to help. By the time they were three-quarters of the way up, Ianto was leaning heavily on the railing, and he started to slow down, panting heavily. They were less than a dozen steps from the top, however, when he suddenly sat down and leaned forward until his forehead was resting on one of the steps above him. "Hey, come on, no lying down on the job," Andy protested, trying without success to force him back on his feet. "Ianto, you have to get up." He got a blurred mumble of sound which he thought might have been a refusal, and he glanced down to where the bomb was sitting and waiting to go off. "Ianto, please move. I'm not leaving without you, and I'd really prefer not to get cut off before my prime. It'd be embarrassing as hell to get blown up on my first day on the job." Ianto managed a breathless laugh. "You'd have to go some to beat Gwen's first day on the job," he gasped. He tried to push himself up, but subsided again with a soft moan of pain. Andy, please go. Don't start with the bloody clichés, okay? Andy said furiously. Ianto gave him a tired smile. I wasn't going to. I was saying that you should go and get Jack. He's strong enough to lift me. Andy gave him a doubtful look. Do I have enough time? Plenty of time, Ianto lied. And Tosh will put the countdown on hold as soon as she realizes what's happened. The quicker you go, though, the quicker you'll get back. Something didn't feel right, but Andy couldn't put his finger on it. All right, then, he said reluctantly. But you better not be lying to me. Wouldn't dream of it, Ianto said with a twisted grin. Now go, all right? Andy started to push his way past him. He took one last look down into the chamber and blinked when he thought he saw another shape down there. Not Billis. There was a woman. He couldn't see her clearly, just the impression of a tall, slender creature with long, wild, dark hair and eyes that burned a dark silver colour. She was gazing up at them, and something in the way she was standing seemed to evoke a sense of desperation. Ianto jerked and lifted his head, looking dazed. "Ma'am?" he asked, sounding confused and lost. Then his expression sharpened and grew alarmed. "Jack?" Andy blinked, looking away from the woman to where Ianto was struggling to his feet. When he looked back, the woman had gone. "Jack! Something's wrong with Jack," Ianto said urgently as he clawed his way back up on his feet. "I heard him calling." It was on the tip of Andy's tongue to say that no one had been calling, but he shut his mouth again. Whatever Ianto thought he had heard, it had got him back on his feet again, and that was all Andy cared about. Grabbing at the other man, he got them up the rest of the steps and into the corridor. They were halfway along it when time ran out and the bomb went off. Temporal bombs were soundless and motionless. They left their surroundings perfectly untouched. There was no shrapnel. There was no concussive blast. All they sent out were intense shockwaves of time, focused and aimed for specific purposes. They couldn't be detected unless you had the right kind of equipment. They could pass through an entire world, unheralded and unseen. But if they weren't calibrated exactly right, or they went off a millisecond too soon or too late, they could unmake that world and rewrite history in a blink of an eye. They could save a universe. They could tear down the walls of heaven. Andy felt something pass through him. It sent an odd tingle right to the base of his spine and then shot a bright bolt of pleasure pain up into his skull. He felt the backs of his eyes shatter into a thousand tiny shards of rapidly spinning light, each one capturing a fragment of the time that was rolling and tumbling all around them. He's standing in the middle of Butte Park, his sister beside him, and watching a blue police box fade away, taking a part of his heart with it. He's standing in the middle of the hub, a blade at his throat, and trying to understand how he could have been so wrong about someone, and how it will almost be a relief to die and leave this useless life behind. He's standing watching Ianto picking up the rubbish, and wondering how on earth he's going to fix this latest quarrel, and when the hell had it suddenly become so important that Ianto not be mad at him. And then Ianto's looking up and smiling and telling him that he's damned lucky he's not on decaf, and he's relaxing and realizing that it's already too late and he's gone and fallen in love like an idiot. He's standing eye stalk to eye stalk with the Dalek and telling it what it can do with his orders, and the Dalek's screeching, "Exterminate!" and he's going to die. He's entangled with Jack, and they make love in silent desperation because Jack thinks he's going to go out and die tomorrow, and this time it will be for keeps. But there's no way he's going to let that happen, and he hopes Jack will forgive him once he recovers from the sedative he'll give him in the drink they'll have after they finish. And he knows it doesn't really matter if Jack doesn't forgive him, because he'll have gone in Jack's place by then, and Jack will still be alive, and that's all that matters. He looks down at the tiny little scrap of life in his arms, and is filled with wonder that he made such a bundle of frantic life. He lifts his gaze to find his lover staring at her too, his eyes wide with wonder, and he knows that this moment is one of the most important in his life. Andy jerked as he fell back into his own body again, and sucked in several deep breaths as he tried to process what had happened. After a moment, he decided he had more important things to worry about, The hub was moaning and groaning all around him like a living thing. He imagined this would be what it would sound like inside a whale if he got swallowed. Everything seemed to be rippling, but he couldn't decide if that was actually happening or if his eyes were still playing tricks. There did seem to be some sort of residual glitter happening at the corner of his eyes. He reached for Yanto and found the other man curled into an almost fetal position, trembling uncontrollably. When Andy put a hand on him, however, he seemed to jerk and then calmed, uncurling to give him a dazed look. The sight of the blood on his clothes brought Andy all the way back into focus, and he struggled to his feet. "Come on, we better see how the others are going." By the time they got to the main hub, the sound effects and the odd rippling sensations seemed to be dying down. Andy had been supporting Ianto, but once they arrived, he suddenly felt himself being towed as Ianto speeded up and made for what Andy belatedly realized was Tosh bending over an unconscious Jack. Ianto practically fell to his knees beside Jack and frantically set about checking for a pulse. "What happened?" Andy asked. Tosh was looking a little freaked, but she seemed to pull herself together when Andy asked his question. "When the bomb went off, he just dropped like a stone. He didn't make a sound, just passed out, and he's been like that ever since." "What about you? There's blood on you," she exclaimed, her eyes widening. "It's Ianto's," Andy said reassuringly, then realized that that might not have been the most tactful way to break the news that Ianto had been injured. Once again, however, she proved to be practical, rather than the kind of shrinking damsel type. She quickly unearthed the first aid kit and chivvied Ianto out of his jacket and shirt so she could clean and bandage the wounds. Ianto barely seemed to register. He was fixated on touching Jack and murmuring in his ear. Andy was a little embarrassed, until he realized that Ianto wasn't whispering sweet nothings, but seemed to be telling Jack to center himself and focus on the sound of Ianto's voice. "He's more time-sensitive than we are," Ianto explained when Tosh had made him stop and take some painkillers with water. "The backlash would hit him hardest of all. He just needs time to find his way back, but it doesn't hurt to have someone give him a clue while he's doing it." He sighed and put the glass to one side. "Did it work, Tosh?" Tosh had been running the new numbers through her computer, and the smile she gave him was answer enough. "Most of the built-up energy seems to have dissipated, although we still have quite a bit of agitation within the rift itself, so we'll probably be busy in the foreseeable future. But yes, I think it worked." Ianto sagged and leaned back against Jack. "Thank God," he said simply. Andy clapped his hands together to attract their attention. "That's enough of that hocus-pocus for now," he told them. "It looks like Tosh and I are going to be in charge for the moment, while you two loll around like a pair of invalids. I don't know about you, but I'm hungry. I'm going to go and get some fish and chips. What do you want me to get you?" After a moment, Tosh laughed and sat back in a chair. "Do you know, I think I am hungry. How peculiar. I'll come with you, Andy. Ianto, you keep an eye on Jack, and don't try and do anything until we get back." She dropped a quick peck on his cheek before collecting her bag and coat and left with Andy. Left in the now peaceful silence of the hub, Ianto shifted around until he was curled up around Jack, resting his head on Jack's shoulder, and started up the soothing litany that he hoped would bring his captain back to his side. "It's all right. You've succeeded, Captain. You've beat the odds, and we're all still here. Come back to me, Jack. Come back to where you belong." It took a while, but Jack finally found the right path and walked along it. It wasn't the nicest path around, and it certainly wasn't as scenic as some of the others, but it was the one that felt right. There was a special timbre to the bird song that surrounded him while he was walking this path that made him think of home. And after all the years of wandering and never quite fitting in, he finally did have a home, a beat-up, disreputable kind of place that lurched from one crisis to another and always seemed to be one step ahead of disaster. But it was his, and he loved it. He loved the people that shared it with him as well. Loved Toshiko, his lady. Steel and silk with a heart of fragile crystal that was so beautiful and so very vulnerable. Loved Hiyento, who loved so hard and desperately and was starting to believe that Jack loved him back. He grieved for Gwen, who had lost her way, found it again, and then found a fate she didn't deserve. He even grieved for Owen, who had always wanted more than he had, and never understood that some things had to be earned and not taken. There were new people in his home now, and only time would tell if they would stay. Andy, he already had a good feeling about. There was an honest innocence about the man, and unlike Gwen, he was wary of the bright, sparkling toys that Jack could offer him, so was less likely to be lulled away from the life that gave him his strength. Jane was even more mysterious, but something about her appealed to Jack, and he was curious to find out what kind of team member she might make. And if worst came to worst, well, there was always retcon. The bird song had become a man's voice now, and Jack's pace quickened unconsciously. He had work to do. It was time to go home. He awoke to the sound of Ianto mumbling something about putting him on decaf for a month if he didn't wake up soon so they could get off this cold, hard floor. Jack let a laugh rumble through him, and knew from the way Ianto broke off that he realized Jack was awake. He was oddly slow in shifting away and sitting up so Jack could do the same. Jack realized why when he saw the bandages. "What the hell happened to you?" he demanded. Ianto pulled a face. "Billis. He appeared in the rift chamber and tried to stop me repairing the bomb. I think he may have been responsible for sabotaging it in the first place." Jack swore. "I thought we'd seen the last of him. We do not need someone like him hanging around." Ianto smothered a yawn. Well, Andy seemed to handle him well enough. He woke up enough to focus on Jack. "He saved my life, Jack. I was wrong about you offering him a place with us. He'll make a good team member." Jack grinned. "Don't let him hear you say that. It'll ruin his day. Where's everyone gone, anyway?" "They went to get some food," Ianto told him sleepily. He looked longingly in the direction of the camp beds. "Jack, can you give me a hand?" Jack gave him his best salacious leer as he helped him to his feet. "Just wait until you get better. I'll give you one hell of a lot more than a hand." He kissed him goodnight just as Ianto fell asleep. Chuckling to himself, Jack went to get himself a drink of water and hoped that Tosh would bring him back something to eat as well. Otherwise, he was going to have to pull rank on Andy and nick his fish and chips. 1 week later, and he was standing on one of his favourite vantage points, looking out over Cardiff. Torchwood London had come through, sending all of their equipment back and some extra besides. Jame had arrived, and after one appalled look, was overhauling the autopsy room and infirmary. Ianto was happily howling his anguished disbelief over the state of the archives, and Tosh was purring over some weird glowing slab of metal with alien script on it that had come through the rift yesterday. Andy was still trying to recover from the hangover he'd got from his leaving due with the police, and glowering suspiciously at the computer Jack had allocated to him. Jack breathed in the air and let it out with a satisfied sigh. They were being kept busy. The rift was hiccuping its way back to normality, and some peculiar things were coming through. But they were coping. Sometimes they were coping by running away very quickly and yelling a lot, but they were coping, and that was what counted. He heard the trapdoor open behind him, and the sound of someone cursing as they discovered the loose rung, and his smile broadened. Sometimes they did more than just cope. "I sometimes think that you were a mountain goat in a previous incarnation," Ianto said as he came to stood beside him. "No such thing as reincarnation," Jack informed him. Ianto snorted. "Since you can't die, you're hardly in a position to pass judgment. Andy's Auntie Bethan knows a medium who told her that she was previous Lord George in a previous life." He maintained a deadpan face as Jack turned to give him an incredulous look. "This is turning out to be quite a trial to the family, since Auntie Bethan has now decided that she owes it to her previous self to get back into politics, so she's running in the local elections. She wanted Andy to hand out flyers." "What did Andy say?" Ianto sighed and shook his head. "Andy regretfully had to inform her that he was planning on voting Conservative at the next election." He paused for a beat while Jack gazed at him in fascination, knowing that there was more to come. "She's cut him out of her will. He's very distraught. Said something about losing out to a gerbil." Jack started to laugh. The answering grin on Ianto's face just made him laugh harder, and he didn't argue when Ianto chivied him into climbing down the ladder. He was still chuckling when he walked outside to find the others waiting by the SUV. Tosh was explaining something to Jame, who was nodding her head and looking enthusiastic. Andy was waiting for them with his arms folded, a mutinous look on his face. "You told him, didn't you?" he said accusingly. "Of course I told him," Ianto said as he moved past. "Did you honestly think I'd be able to resist? Well, it's bloody unfair, that's all I can say," Andy said indignantly as he turned to follow Ianto and Jack into the SUV. "That house of hers is worth a cool half a million, and now she's going to leave it to that ruddy gerbil of hers. I don't think that I'm an unnatural nephew if I refuse to hand out leaflets telling people that my aunt is the reincarnation of David Lloyd George, and they should vote for her because of that." "I can think of worse reasons to vote for someone," Jane put in. "Don't you start," Andy offered. "All I'm saying is that it would be a public service if you were to retcon her into forgetting that she was a reincarnated anything." "What?" Jack twisted around in his seat to give him a scandalized look. "I can't do that." "Why not?" "It'd be a public service, not to mention stopping the war that's broken out in my family. Besides, you don't want that gerbil getting its hand on property. There'd be no stopping the little rodent once it had some capital behind it." Jack blinked, realizing that he had never truly appreciated how surreal conversations could become until he'd met Andy. "Andy, it's just a gerbil." "That's what you think," Andy said in dark satisfaction. "This gerbil's an alien." Jack wasn't the only one to snort in amusement at that. "Andy, it's true. For a start, the damn thing's been around for 20 years, and that's not normal for a gerbil, is it? And it's all a ferny, funny, greenish ginger all over, except for that top knot of white fluff, and those bleedy little red eyes just look at you. And it makes noises that sound just like it's laughing at you when it sees you doing something you shouldn't be doing. And the damn thing likes champagne and pasta with truffles. And when was the last time you saw a gerbil knocking back a few glasses of Dom Perignon, eh?" "Jack?" Tosh said quietly. "Yeah?" "Well, that description does match an alien race called the Mwi. They're known for their psychopathic urges and their tendency to try and take over any planet they land on." Jack sighed and closed his eyes, then grinned wryly. "Oh, what the hell. It's a slow day. Ianto?" "Auntie Bethan's it is, sir," Ianto said as he accelerated the SUV smoothly. "Torchwood," Jack thought. "Defenders of Earth against alien menaces. Even alien menaces that look like ginger psychopathic gerbils. God, I love my life." And the wonderful thing was, he really did. The end.